Hey everybody, I'm Bill. I'm an alcoholic. This is very early in the morning, and that happy birthday song was just more than I could really handle. That was just too perky. It's good to be here. This is a good start to the day. I was thinking about what I was going to talk about. I got 20 minutes. And I have a lot of opinions, so I have to like weed some of them out so I can fit it in the 20-minute thing. But what I'd like to talk about is spiritual condition. It says in our book that the only thing that's going to keep us sober, because we're just utterly powerless and we can't make ourselves not drink, but the only thing that's going to keep us sober, and more than that, give us a life with some purpose, maybe some intimacy in relationships, maybe the promises will come true for us, is our spiritual condition and the maintenance of that. I've been sober since March the 27th, 1985. And I am very impressed by that. It just impresses the living daylights out of me. I was really hoping when I got here that this might work for me. I didn't think it would, you know, like most of us do. Who knows? You walk into this place and it's an odd situation. Nobody feels really part of. Nobody feels very good about themselves when they get to AA. It's usually not a really good day when that happens. And it's probably the end of a long string of miserable goddamn days, you know. And here's another one. I spent 35 days in a recovery place, and I walked into the Hermosa Beach Alano Club on a Friday night, and it was the gong show, and it was rock and roll, man. It was not what I was expecting. And I stood in the back of that room, and I didn't feel part of, because I wasn't. And it was a crazy meeting. Everybody's dressed up trying to hook up. A lot of people said it wasn't really an AA meeting, and it was perfect for this old hippie from the 60s. Weird has always attracted me, and I find you to this day deliciously strange and odd. And it just never ends, I get, you know. And I look back over the 3.5 decades that I've been around you. I've never drifted away. I've always gone to meetings. I've had the same sponsor for 36 years. I should have fired him several times, but he needs me now. And I can see the phases that I've gone through. Because I believe what's happening to all of us is that we're growing up emotionally now, and it's a little bit late because we missed it, you know? And I don't think we have anything strangely weird like alcoholic thinking. I don't think that's what's going on. I think we're just emotionally immature. Most of us started drinking in our teenage years, and when the lessons were being handed out, we were not in the vicinity, you know? Just weren't connected, you know? And I got here at 37, and I had the emotional development of a retarded 16-year-old. And this kid certainly was not an honor student, mature beyond his years. He's the one with a bit of a problem with authority. And that's who walked in here. Now, a couple of things happened to me that were just pure luck. The first one, when I walked into that meeting that night, is I just liked it. And I've never really lost that. It's not everybody's story. I got intrigued by AA fairly quickly. And what brought me back, I think, the next night, other than just desperation, because I really didn't want to drink anymore, and I thought I was gonna, for sure. I always had. But was curiosity. I just come back to find out what are they gonna say next, you know? And I got intrigued by the stories. I mean, you guys would tell on yourself right in front of large groups of people, and that was an odd experience. Where do you run into that? And the second thing happened that I asked a guy to help me after a couple of weeks, and he actually did, which doesn't always happen. He said, go home and read the doctor's opinion, make notes in the margin of what you agree with and what you don't, be at my house Thursday at 5 o'clock, and we'll discuss it. So little gangster me went home and did his little assignment, and I showed up to this stranger's house at Thursday at 5 o'clock, and he didn't trust me that I'd read it, and he had me sit there and read it to him out loud. Me and that man have done sponsorship workshops and many other things around a good hunk of the world over the years. And rule number one, when you're sponsoring people, is make sure they read the book. Don't trust them. Read it with them. It'll probably help you out. You know, how do you stay connected to the program, which is the 12 steps? Even if you're not doing it, everybody knows what the real program is. You know, how do you stay connected to that? Well, you read the book with people. If I have to read War Fever Ran High in That New England Town one more goddamn time, I think I'm going to blow my head off. But now I'm doing it on Zoom with people. You know, who knew that was going to happen? And each week I went to this guy's house and we read another chapter in the book. And he brought me into Alcoholics Anonymous. He introduced me to his friends. He took me to his meetings. Back in that day, we were doing 12-step calls a lot. He would take me with him as he'd get 12-step calls. And we'd visit people in hospitals and everything that happens around here. Everything that I've done for the past 36 years, I did all of that in the first year I was sober. And it's the same stuff. Sometimes it looks a little bit different. Sometimes there's a little more enthusiasm than other times, but it's the same stuff. So what is spiritual condition? You know, what I've been thinking about this last year in the pandemic, you know, I've been writing some stuff down and talking to people. And what I've been thinking about is, what is this spiritual condition? Do I have one? How did I get it? And what's it made up of? You know, the process of getting there is working the steps. And what happens to us? How are we transformed when we do that? Where does our dependence lie? Am I powerless and then I get some power from somewhere else that's outside of myself? Am I re-empowered now, or am I just utterly powerless and I have a difficult time realizing that? And my take on this, the very first thing that this man talked to me about when I sat there that day, that first time, and read out the doctor's opinion, is he talked to me about powerlessness. He asked me if I thought I was. And now they took it easy on us and they just said that we were powerless over drugs and alcohol because they didn't want us to run screaming down the street. And after 3.5 decades of looking at it, I think I am utterly powerless over absolutely everything. I don't think that there's anything I have any power over. I think it's worse than I thought. And God knows I have asserted myself many times over this last 3.5 decades, you know, to try. Evidently, the way I live my life, if you look at it from the outside, is evidently what I believe is that things outside myself need to be different in order for me to be okay. And they don't change, and I suffer. I'm utterly powerless over you, and I talk to you incessantly about how if you were just a little bit different, the two of us would be a hell of a lot happier. And you absolutely insist upon living your own life, and it pisses me off at my core. The reason I have bad behavior is because of your behavior. The reason I yell at you is because of what you said and what you did. If you did not say and do those things, I wouldn't be forced to yell at you. You know, my bad behavior is your fault. You're the source of all the frustration in my life. And I work diligently to try to get you to be different so that we can be happy. And it doesn't work, and I suffer. I'm totally powerless over the geopolitical situation in the world. Look at it. It's a mess. I get involved in it. It needs to be different. It's incorrect. Things are wrong. And I suffer. I suffer. Now, if I can grasp the powerless thing, just the drugs and alcohol when I'm new, just that part, not all this other stuff. If I can grasp that, the second step then becomes operational. So the first pillar of spiritual condition is this powerless idea. Any spiritual path that you go down, Buddhism, Hinduism, dualism, non-dualism, whatever it is, Taoism, Christianity, even the mystics in Christianity, talk about this idea of personal powerlessness. The very first tradition of Alcoholics Anonymous says our common welfare should come first. The world could use that, don't you think? Our common welfare. It's not about me. This whole idea of individual rights, you know? I mean, what kind of rights do we really have? How separate are we from everybody else around us and everything around us? How separate are we? But if I can get the drugs and alcohol part, then the second step becomes operational. I need to align myself with the power. Clearly, there's something going on here. Something's running the show. Now, we get all hung up in concepts. There's people in AA that'll tell you that you have to believe in God in order to do Alcoholics Anonymous. Usually, they're talking about the God that they believe in as compared to the God that other people believe in. So we get all hung up in the concepts, and we miss the entire experience of it, whatever it is, because we're trying to define it, delineate it, you know, box it in, and because God knows you wouldn't want to believe in the wrong shit. You know, that could be really dangerous, you know. What if you believed in the wrong one? You know, so we get all hung up in that. But to me, what it is it's an experience that we experience here. We actually experience it, whatever you want to define it as. And usually what we do is we create a God, then don't believe in it. You know, it's all conceptual. It's a conceptual problem. But all you really need to know, my experience is here, all you really need to know about God is it's not you. And that's pretty damn obvious, you know. I mean, I am not running the show. There's something else running the show. What else do I really need to know? And Wilson wrote about this very extensively, you know, and he talked about being open-minded and willing. That's all it takes, is don't shut the door on something that you don't understand anyway. And I can do that. I can grasp that. I can work with that. If I can do that, the third step becomes operational. Now, the third step's interesting because it says I'm going to make a decision to turn my life and will over to clearly what already has it anyway. I think it was nice of them to lead me to believe that I actually have some say in the matter, right? Well, I've been withholding myself from the totality of all things long enough. I'm going to acquiesce now and allow you to take me. Thank you very much. Where's my trophy? You know, it's like, and what life and will is it talking about, right? It's the inventory, isn't it? Isn't that the life and will it's talking about? The end result of living a life of seeming powerlessness is resentment, fears, and broken sexual relationships. That's what I bring to you. That's the mess of my life. You know, that's who I am, is those three things. What I hate, what I'm afraid of, and you. You know, that's my goddamn problem right there, okay? So I write that down, right? And then I share it with this stranger sitting in his living room. Actually, we did it out on the beach. I thought it should be done in a dark place somewhere. What do we learn from the inventory process? What is one of the things we learn from the inventory process? I think the big lesson in that is I have to stop blaming other people and institutions for my problems. High school is over, right? It's like it's time for little Billy to take responsibility for his own life, you know, probably for the first time in his life. I share this with this man, and we begin that conversation, right? Because what are we looking for? We're looking for the fourth column of that inventory, right? It's pretty clear, you know. This is, what am I resentful at? What exactly happened? You know, the third column is, how was I affected by that? Which is a good information. As the years go by, when you do other inventories, that third column gets a little bit richer, you know, as you can see better. And then the fourth column, the big one, it doesn't say what was my part. It says, what were my faults and mistakes? Isn't that what we're looking for? Isn't that the source? Isn't that where all the character defects live? You know, how did Bill react to this situation, right? But what we learn is I have to stop the blaming. The way the alcoholic life seems like the only normal one is it's got to be someone else's fault, right? And a large part of my personality is made up of who I don't like, who I disagree with, what arguments that I carry. That's a large part of who I am. And when you begin to let go of that, when you begin to realize I have to stop blaming that, if it's your fault, if you need to be different in order for me to be okay, it's not going to work out well. Boy, I am totally powerless, even over myself, but I am definitely powerless over you and things outside myself. If you get those two things together, you begin to grasp the powerlessness a little bit, and you start attempting to stop the blaming and whining about what went wrong in your life that causes you to be the way you are. Your character defects will come and visit you with alarming regularity. You don't even need to make a list of them. They'll show up, you know, in stark living color. because now they've taken away our medication and all this stuff is going to come to the surface. The real issues are now going to present themselves, you know. I love in the psychotherapeutic world, you know, they talk about, they define all of our problems. I love borderline personality disorder. Don't we all have that? It's borderline. I have a personality problem, right? We get into the amends. You want me to make amends to these people that I've been blaming for my problems. And I do not want to do that. I don't want to make amends. I'm afraid to do it. I think it's stupid and I don't want to do it, but I do it anyway. I do it. For some reason, some of us do it. My experience working with guys for over the years is that this is where the real balking happens, is in the amends process. A lot of people can get through the inventory and you get some relief from that, but boy, guy, by God, we don't want to go out there and look these people in the eye. And when I do that, when I walk up to somebody that I don't ever want to see again, when I turn and walk away from that experience of making my amends to that person or institution, when I walk away from that, I am changed right then and there. This is the beginning of the transformation process, is the amends process. And what do we learn? What's the big principle? We got two pillars of spiritual condition. We got powerlessness and I have to stop the blaming. The third one is nothing was ever personal. And what is the defining trait of somebody that's selfish and self-centered and emotionally immature? Everything is personal. Everything's happening to me. It's all happening to me. I am the center of the universe. And when you go make the amends, you realize people were just doing what they do, and I happen to be in the blast radius of their behavior. And sometimes you're in the blast radius of my behavior. Am I doing it specifically to you? No. You're just the next victim in line. This is just what I do. This is what I'm a bully, and I act that way. But it's not personal, and nobody was ever doing anything to me. They were just doing what they do, and I happened to be there. And a large part of the question is, why was I even there in the first place? Why was I hanging out with those people? What was that about? Now, when these three things come together, powerlessness, no more blaming, and nothing is personal, this is the collapse of the egoic structure of who I think I am. It begins to fall apart. This is not a pleasant process. This isn't, 1 through 9 is about 10% of the program. It's not the work. 1 through 9 is sober 101. It's the beginning of the process. What I have to do to develop a message that has some depth and weight so that I can begin the work, the real work in AA. And the real work is 10, 11, and 12. That's where we live. It's 90% of the program. And the fourth pillar of spiritual condition, when the first three come together, is self-awareness as compared to self-obsession, right? This is a big leap. This is that self-awareness without humor is depression. It's like when you look at yourself and you have to ask yourself, is it really that bad? And the answer is yes, Bill, you're that bad. You're that self-centered. You're that self-obsessed. It's that bad. It's you, Bill. It's always been you. It's never been them. It's always been you. That's hard to look at. People run away from this, you know. At about 10 years sober, I had a mental and emotional collapse, you know. I mean, just the sheer weight of carrying my personality around just about crushed me, you know. It was pretty tough. The 10th step is the continuing inventory process, self-awareness. Developing the skill of the watcher, being able to see yourself move through life. In meditation, in the 11th step, it's part of the step. You do it. My sponsor says you can't stay sober on 11 and a half steps. But in meditation, you can have the real experience of watching yourself think. You can focus on the breath and the little ego that every human being has it. You know, it's not trying to hurt me. It's part of me. God knows it needs me for transportation, you know, but it doesn't like being in the present moment. There's nothing for it to do. There's nothing wrong in the present moment. Everything's absolutely as it should be. How can it possibly be any different? Clearly, what God's will is what's happening right now, you know, and we have trouble with that. So we argue about what God's will is. Well, clearly, it's what's happening right now. If it wasn't God's will, it wouldn't be here, you know, and I have trouble with right now. So in meditation, my mind will wander away from the breath, and then I notice it has wandered away, and I gently bring it back to the breath. Absolute, conclusive proof that who I am is clearly not my thinking mind. If it was, I couldn't see it. This is a game changer. This changes the entire game. I can finally stop working on myself. I'm just feeding the beast. It's not about me. It's not a self-help program. You know, it's about literally getting out of self. And what's the mechanism that's used for that in this spiritual path of Alcoholics Anonymous? Working with others. What else could it possibly be? How many times have our sponsors told us when we're complaining about a problem, well, how many people are you working with? Why don't you go down to the club and look for somebody that's more miserable than you? And we get pissy. I get pissy about that because I've paid good money to psychotherapists to sit and listen to what I think my problems are and how I feel about that. Self-awareness. And what's the final pillar of spiritual condition? The 12th step is the mechanism that's used to bring all this to fruition. If I really want to go inside and see who I really am and find the true self, I don't like that term, but people use that a lot. What if we're looking for something that really isn't even there? You know, what if it's all a mirage, right? But ultimately, what was it we experienced when we walked into AA? People were kind to us, weren't they? People were friendly. People got us a cup of coffee. They asked us if we saved a seat. They stood outside the clubhouse and they talked to us for 45 minutes after a meeting one night, remembered our name the next time we came back. It's compassion, isn't it? Isn't that the heart and soul of really any spiritual path, but certainly of Alcoholics Anonymous? And what is a selfish and self-centered person missing? What's the primary attribute that is lacking in someone that's selfish and self-centered? Compassion, empathy. The only time I'm really concerned about how you feel is when how you feel impacts me. I don't really feel what's going on with you. I started sponsoring people at a year sober. There was never any question that that's what was going to happen. That just seemed to be, that's just what we do here. Should everybody sponsor people? There's really nothing else to do. And in that 12th step, I will see myself through your eyes much better than I'll ever flesh it out on my own. You will reflect me back to me. For years, I thought I was the teacher and you were the student. Then I realized you have always been the teacher. When I ask for help, he sends me you. He sends me you. You show up. You've always been the teacher. I can see my own hypocrisy when I give you a 20-minute lecture on how you should live your life and you leave the room and I think to myself, boy, that is good stuff. I should record that and give it to everybody. And then the next thing is maybe I should even do some of it myself. Right? I called my sponsor. I said, Jay, I think I'm a hypocrite. And he goes, no, Bill, it's worse than you think. You're a liar. You want to work on your character defects, sponsor people. You'll run into every one of them. You know, how can you avoid it? So the final pillar of spiritual condition and the foundation stone of Alcoholics Anonymous and any real valid spiritual path is compassion. And I have plenty of character defects that I can see and I can define, but I don't know the stuff that's missing in me that was never developed. Over the years, that's become a bigger problem because I don't know it's not there. I've never experienced it. And what has happened to me is I've worked with you over the years somewhere in that process, even though I might have been trying to make a name for myself in an anonymous organization, is I fell in love with you, irrespective of what my motivation was. You invited me into your life, and I went. I showed up, and I invited you into mine, and you showed up, and our lives changed together. We walked this path together. Some years ago, I started doing fifth steps with the guys I sponsor, in order to break down that bullshit hierarchy, you know? Because all I'm trying to do is get close to you and I don't know how to do it. And sponsorship can be a power structure in and of itself and become its own problem. And I saw this happening to me. I could see this happening to me. And I took steps to try to break it down. Not that it's a negative thing, but I just want to be closer to you. That's all I've ever wanted and I don't know how to do that. So the final pillar of spiritual condition is compassion, and I'll leave you with this. They say around here you got to give it away to keep it. No, that isn't how it works. You have to give it away to even get it. That's how it really works. Thank you very much.